You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
Enhanced 5719. Track 45 left. Stop. Enhanced 15 to 23. Hard copy right there.
Welcome to the Stone Tapes. As you might have guessed, this month we're looking at Blade Runner and the works of Philip K. Dick. But first, we're heading all the way to Texas after I introduce the crew today, which is David J. Howe.
Hello.
George Mann.
Hello.
Of course, Alex Lefchuk, who's actually got a microphone, so you could say hello this time.
Hello.
Lord.
And on the telephone, all the way from Texas, Patricia H. Ash. Hello, Patricia.
Hiya.
Hi.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Patricia.
Oh, it's so great to hear from you. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I've been reading a lot of books.
And what have you been reading this month, Patricia?
This month I've been reading Monster Hunter International, and part of the series that goes with it. It's by a guy named Larry Correa.
Sounds right. Correa.
Yeah, C-O-R-R-E-I-A. So I'm going to say Correa.
Yeah, it sounds good to
sure.
me.
Mm. Larry. They're by a guy named Larry.
Yeah, it's pronounced Smith.
Monster Hunter International.
Definitely.
Now, isn't that a very provocative title to begin with? Tell us about
it.
It's
a bit of what it says on the tin, really. Monsters are real. They're hunted by people.
Internationally.
Internationally, yeah. Well, yeah, because I'll go into that in a bit. But there's this guy named Owen Pitt, and he is trying very, very hard to be normal, completely normal. He's an accountant. His dad raised him with some kind of weird military training almost, preparing him for some kind of apocalypse or something his whole childhood. So now he's trying to be a normal person. He's an accountant. And then his boss turns into a werewolf and tries to eat him. So
oh,
he
wow.
throws him out the window. Yeah. That's chapter one. This is a really action-packed
That is
series.
A lot to happen in the first chapter. So how
chapter
does that progress?
One,
does it continue to be as good as that?
It does. It does. It's one fight after another. Once he throws the werewolf out the window and learns that monsters are a real thing, and the government doesn't want you to know about them, he gets recruited by this company called Monster Hunter International, which is the title of the book and then the series. So Monster Hunter International hunts monsters for money. There's government bounties placed on monsters because really nobody wants zombies eating their citizens. Also, if you want to keep monsters a secret, you need to have no monsters. So he joins Monster Hunter International and has a great time. I guess he seems like he's very good at it. Some stuff happens, and it turns out that he's some
Will
kind
is here,
of
I can tell.
So he's got to, the stakes are very, very high. They start with a werewolf, and they get just higher. Like, there are Lovecraftian entities that want to eat
wow.
the earth, basically, and he's the only one who can stop them. And this is funny, actually. There's a lot of hilarious one-liners and jokes. It's like they're facing the apocalypse with this great sense of humor. And that is one of the things that made this a really good book.
When you read it, the sense of humor, did it feel as though it was written straight but just was funny? Or do you think that the writer knew what he was doing? Because I'm always curious about that.
I think the writer knew exactly what he was doing. And it wasn't like making light of their situation or anything. It wasn't like, oh, ha ha, giant tentacles. it was more, giant tentacles aren't really funny. It was more like it's told in the first person. So we're hearing all of this from Owen, the main character. And he just seems to have a sense of humor about what's going on. And a lot of the other characters who are all very vivid and entertaining and very interesting people. It's like, well, I could read a story about this guy. I could read a whole book about this guy. I really want to know more about this. Oh, he's dead.
Oh.
He got eaten. Oops. I guess we're not going to hear a story about him. But they all seem very interesting. They all have their own lives and
Their own backstory.
Humor.
So it was a little bit of
it's a very rich world.
In that case, a bit of a Game of Thrones element going on there. You just get to like a character and wham, they kill him off.
Yeah. Most of the really good characters survive the book. So, but one of them dies in the second book, which is sad.
Aww.
I was like, oh, I really like that guy. But, you know, they're dealing with a potential apocalypse, so somebody's going to die.
So if you were to give this...
Everybody dies, but then they undo time, and so everybody lives.
Undo time.
It doesn't really pull any punches.
So if you were going to give this a mark out of 10, what would it be?
9 out of 10.
Wow, that is quite...
High praise indeed.
Yeah.
And one of the really great things
is... It's the first in a series, say?
It's the first in a series, yeah. It's the first in a series, and it maintains this... this level of goodness for at least the next two books. I haven't gotten hold of book 4 yet, but I hope it's going to be just as amazing.
Well, what was the title again, please, Patricia?
Monster Hunter International.
By Larry Correa. And I think you're right, and that sounds right,
yeah.
Doesn't it, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Larry Correa. Thank you so much. And I think we'll all be looking out for that one.
One more kiss, dear. One more sigh. Only this, dear, is goodbye. For our love is such pain and such pleasure. From the trees, tumble to the ground and die. So in the springtime, like sweet memories, they will return as will I. Like the sun, dear, up on high, will return. And we'll banish the
dear. One more sigh. Only this, dear, is goodbye. For our love is such passion, such pleasure. I will treasure until I die. Like the sun, dear, upon high, will return, dear, to the sky.
And that was Vangelis, One More Kiss, Dear, and from the Blade Runner soundtrack.
Yes.
Again, continuing our lovely theme.
Absolutely.
And joining us now on the telephone with that amazing technology that we have these days, all the way from... Are you still in your castle, Robin?
I am still in my castle temporarily, but we really need to find a new name for my review.
We do, don't
I
we?
I can't get rid of him. It's like rats in the wainscoting. It's Robin in the castle.
Incidentally, that last track I heard, when I was listening to it, I wanted to laugh because that's exactly what I imagine David's singing voice to be like.
In fact, he was just singing it.
Really, yeah. It wasn't the recording.
I've been unveiled.
I can imagine it was a crooner.
A guilty secret. Yes.
So, Robin, you're going to be reviewing today...
Blade Runner.
Oh, how about
2049.
Yes. So we're going to be looking at the latest rendition.
Yeah, so we've skipped a few sequels there. The 2048 sequels that we sort of missed in between the original one and this one.
I would really rather have seen any one of those than this.
Oh, dear. Robin.
Okay. All of our viewers are now listeners, are thinking, oh, God, here he goes.
Go on, tell us what you thought. Give us a summary of what this is about.
Right. Set 30 years after the original Blade Runner, the Tyrell Corporation, who is, responsible for all the replicants, have gone bankrupt. There's been massive blackouts, and Ryan Gosling has become a Blade Runner.
Yes.
Okay. Strike one. Oh, boy.
I think you're not a Gosling fan, then.
It's a hard job, but someone's got to do it.
Well, you know, I loved him in Drive. That was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a Blade Runner film. A Blade Runner film that I've waited, 35 years for the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so looking forward to it. I was thinking, seeing that fantastic future noir 1930s cyberpunk city, replicants, spinners, the flying cars, the giant, all of it. And I sat there, and I sat there, and I sat there, and I sat there, and I sat there.
Oh,
and
dear.
Within a first hour, after the first hour, I thought, oh, my God.
Mm.
They have made such a slow-moving, ponderously plotted film that it actually lost my attention, and I was so disappointed. I'm not one of these people who think it's hip and cool to like, yeah, this is really popular, so I don't like it. But it was like, I've waited 30 years, but seriously? Seriously? Bring the director here to Cineworld right now so I can slap him.
Yeah.
The plot, they found out that the replicants have been able to reproduce, and there is a replicant baby out there somewhere, or a child. So they need to go hunting for Rick Deckard, Harrison Ford, who has been missing for 30 years since the last of the film, with a massive question, are you a replicant or not? Mm. Well, it's now been answered.
Yes.
Anyway, they find Harrison Ford, and he needs a slap as well. You know, if they're going to pay you big money, Harrison, to act in a film, then let's get some acting done. Do not phone in your performance. Mm. Okay? This is the third time we've seen a Harrison Ford film where several years after the last time we saw him, he appears to have a child out of somewhere and there's a dysfunctional relationship. This guy should not have children. Indiana Jones, breeding, if it's child beef, no, don't do it. You know, your son killed you in Star Wars.
Yeah.
The heck? I just found it overlong, over tedious. It tries to be arty. It's too dark. There's a chase sequence, you know, involving spinners. And I'm thinking, oh, great, a chase sequence. They crash land. Then all of a sudden, there's a flood.
Yeah.
Where'd that flood come from? It wasn't raining that hard a few minutes ago.
We said that. Where are they? We thought they crashed into, like, one of the... you know, LA's got the great big storm drain things. I thought it was in one of those, but then it seemed to be the sea because the tide came in. And I was like, well, I know LA's by the sea, but I'm still not quite sure where they are.
Well, I thought, you know, it's the storm drains. Come on. Yeah. Maybe one of the giant ants from them is still out there.
Yes.
But they're fighting for, you know, it's just a ploy to have Harrison Ford in some kind of jeopardy for him to survive.
Mm.
And it bored me. And I hate being bored in a film. And I thought, you know, Blade Runner, Philip K. Dick, this is going to be a thoughtful sci-fi epic, but it's not based on anything he ever wrote. His characters, yes, but he never wrote this.
Well, we'll come back to that in a minute, actually, because I do want to ask that question of you guys. But, George, you said a different view to Robin. So what was your thoughts on the film?
I'm sorry to hear you didn't like it, Robin. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I don't know whether it's just me having bad taste, but I don't know, it completely absolved me. I've seen it twice at the cinema.
Twice? Well, my goodness.
I came twice.
But I am willing to admit that maybe on this occasion I have the attention span of a gnat.
I don't know. I agree that it's not perfect. But I did think it was a flawed gem. It is a bit overlong. I don't think they... There's a whole host of little issues in there, but I loved the cinematography, and I thought the fact that they let it breathe and let those scenes linger long was great, because people don't do that anymore. I love the way they tackled the themes of the first one about what qualifies as love and what doesn't, but they did it in a different way with joy. And I didn't think they answered the question about whether Deckard was a replicant or not.
Seen the director's cut of the original that came in a DVD box a few years ago, along with the cinema and the extended cut, there were three cuts in it. It makes it pretty obvious that he was indeed a Blade Runner at the end. But can anybody please explain to me how the holographic hooker worked? I can't figure that one out.
No, I don't think
maybe
we're meant
it's not
to.
For a family show.
Was it like in Red Dwarf? Was it like a hard drive so that she could actually interact
that
with
thing
people?
That he brought
oh,
about,
the number of puns that have just come into my mind just now.
Let's not go there.
Well, it was something like that.
He had that device, didn't he, that he brought back?
He did.
I can't remember what it was called, but it let her appear anywhere.
That's right. That was an addition to...
You could carry
she
it
was on like a console, is what they referred to as I recall.
Yeah.
David, what's your opinion of this film?
I'm kind of with Robin. I really, really wanted to enjoy it because I love the original film. And I just felt, I mean, when we came out of it, I turned to Sam and I said, you know, you could tell that Ridley Scott wasn't directing. It didn't have his deftness of touch. It didn't have his attention to detail. It didn't have his, I mean, you think of the original Blade Runner, and you think of those street scenes where Harrison Ford is having the Chinese, and there are people everywhere, and it's raining and dirty and grimy, and every single little thing in foreground, midground, background is worked for and worked out and detailed, and the light is beautiful, and it's just absolutely beautiful. In this film, I don't think we actually... I'm probably wrong completely, but I don't think we actually saw anybody else apart from the one scene where... What's-his-face goes back to his flat and there's all people standing around.
No, there was the prostitute scene as well where he was in outside and the Pris kind of character
The point I'm making is that the Blade Runner is a complete world. Completely built world that you totally... agree with. In Blade Runner 2049, it's like there's nothing. There's nobody there. There's no attention to detail. The main characters are like walking through this dystopian environment, and they might as well be on their own.
It was very dark.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It was very, very dark. The other thing I didn't like about it was, again, as I said to Sam, if you are going to either remake, do a sequel to, do a prequel to a classic film, you know, and no one would hopefully argue that Blade Runner wasn't a classic film.
It's classic.
If you're going to do that, the first and most important question that you have to ask yourself is, do I have something more to say about this world? And I really don't think that 2049 actually had anything new to say about the world. I didn't like the fact that it sort of, spoilers coming up, guys. I didn't like the fact that it again revolved around memories implanted and the horse rather than the unicorn origami figure. It seemed to be the same basic idea again.
Yeah.
It seemed to be doing the same thing again. And it's like, we did that in the first film. What are you trying to do here? You're not. It's not a remake. You're not remaking it. It's not a prequel. It's a kind of a sequel. But what are you trying to say?
Well,
what was it that was left unknown? The only thing in that first film that was left unknown is Harrison Ford a replicant or not? That was the only question that was left unanswered.
And no spoilers on that one. My opinion of it, and I watched it at the same time with David, and I must admit, he did actually nod off halfway through it. I looked at him and thought, is he asleep? And then his eyes opened and I thought, well, maybe he's not. But I actually, like George, I enjoyed the slow burn. But then I do, that's one of the differences between David and I, is that I always enjoy a slow burn of a film. And I did enjoy that. Mm. I agree, though, that it was shot very dark. I agree with some of the, you know, the problems with it that you guys have mentioned. And actually, when I finished watching it, I did feel a little bit shell-shocked because I absolutely wanted to love the film so much that I couldn't say that at the end of it, that I absolutely loved it. I could say I loved bits of it and I loved the fact that, you know, some of the elements that I thought were there in Blade Runner. I liked the touch that the prostitute girl looked a bit like Pris and she was wearing the shaggy dog type of coat and had the same sort of bag. I liked that sort of thing. But what I didn't like was the story. I thought it was silly. I actually thought it was ridiculous, the idea of robots having, you know, replicants, because, again, my logical brain was analysing the whole thing going, but that's ridiculous. You'd have to create a whole sort of...
And there were so many unanswered questions.
Menstrual cycle for the woman, is what I was trying to say. It's not possible.
We went through a little bit of this, that there's a scene in the film where they... I can't remember the characters, I'm sorry. But they go to the place where they have the examples of the different models of replicants cases. And it absolutely gives you the impression that replicants are created as adults to do the things that adults do, and they have this lifespan of 2 years or whatever it is. So how can there be a baby replicant? What, that it grows up?
Because it's half human, apparently.
How can it age? And I got very kind of puzzled, really, as to, I don't really.
Couldn't
understand.
Be fully born.
I
mean, that's the point, though, isn't it?
What they're exploring is that what is humanity and what makes people human.
But again, if you just think of it, I mean, take yourself out of the film slightly.
Yes, and I like that element, George.
Yeah, so Rachel was a replicant in Blade Runner.
Mm.
Yeah, her and Harrison Ford got together, and apparently she had a baby. Now, if Rachel is a replicant and replicants are not meant to have babies, why on earth did they build her with ovaries, a womb, the ability to have a baby?
It's a bit, it, to me, that was the thing. It was just a way to just, I couldn't suspend disbelief enough for that one.
It's like
because
suddenly
if she'd been made by as some kind of organic thing, or, which
they're
was basically like a clone,
genetically.
Well, they are, but.
Oh, that's that one. They're genetically engineered humans with bits taken out.
But then they're technically not robots, are they? Well, they're replicants, but they're not. Well, maybe that's what I didn't get from it. That's interesting.
Androids, the original term that Dick was using when he talked about androids, it refers to clones, effectively. Yep. And it's been taken to become a term for robots. Yep. But it's actually...
Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the darkness at 10 hours of game. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears.
That was Tears in Rain by Van Gelis.
So we're coming back to this discussion.
Yes, absolutely. But before we do, I want to just ask, Alex, since you've got a microphone, I'm going to let you speak. What did you think of Blade Runner? Because I know you've got an opinion on this as well, and we might as well, because this is a fascinating discussion.
I think it's quite extraordinary because it's echoing exactly what the first Blade Runner actually brought to us. The critics hated Blade Runner. People forget it was a flop when it was first released, and it took several years before people started realising, actually, this is a cult classic. Looking at Blade Runner 2049, I tend to sign more with George. I didn't think it was a perfect movie. For me, I think that was probably more Wonder Woman this year. But in terms of what we actually got there, it certainly addressed the line. Now, there are folks who actually said that it would have been better if they'd taken an adaptation of the K.W. Jeter Blade Runner novel series and actually worked through that system. Yeah, there are plot flaws and so on, but at the same time, it's one of those movies where what Villeneuve has actually brought to the party is something which has got people talking. It's opened up a whole range of debates on the system. I think it's true to the original universe of Blade Runner, but that was never an action-adventure universe.
No.
And I think that the way that those things are developed has certainly raised a number of key points. I thought Harrison Ford, I'll disagree with Robin on this, I thought Harrison Ford was perfectly okay in this particular
one. Actually thought the film lifted when he came in it. I thought it was great when he was in it, actually.
I thought his dog was better.
I like the dog, the notion, or the replicant, inevitably.
I mean, it is, officially, you've got the line that consistently across the last two decades, Ridley Scott believes that Harrison Ford was clearly a replicant, and obviously is a replicant. Rick Deckard is a replicant. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Harrison Ford, we believe, is actually human. I know, Robin, you might sort of change that. But the other flip side of it was that Harrison Ford maintains that actually Deckard was human and not a replicant.
I love the fact they kind of address that when Officer K says, is the dog real? And he says, I don't know, ask him. Mm. And that's kind of clearly a reference to that.
Mm. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. Mm. I mean, there were a bit... I mean, it's a flawed film. And I would agree there's a lot in it that you can really like. Unfortunately, I think for me, there's more in it that I didn't like than I liked. I mean, another thing, we've been listening to some beautiful music by Vangelis there. And he was sorely missed. Oh, the soundtrack, I just so...
It didn't have the electrifying Rutger Hauer speech.
No. Yes, as well, yes.
But just the music, the tones, the subtlety, the beauty of the original score. Mm. There were touches of it. I think they pinched a few stings and bits and bobs. But Nowhere close.
Again, I agree with you on that, because the Vangelis score, when you saw the flying cars, it became almost a sort of ballet with a gaudy neon underpinning, didn't it?
Yeah. And you did get goosebumps every time you heard the music. I've just got them now thinking about it.
It's 2049, it's a 160-minute film that would be vastly improved cut to 90.
Yeah, I think you might be right. And
that,
yet, actually, I've heard colleagues in academia say exactly this, the reverse of that, but they actually would have wanted more. They would have wanted
another
20 or 30 minutes because they were so in trance in the world. So I think it is a kind of classic case of where the jury is to that. Exactly.
But of course...
Sorry, I'm interrupting you, David, but I just want to score off everybody. What would you give it out of 10? I'm saying 8 because I did like it.
I would go 8.5. It's interesting, Phil Leonis, it's his movie of the year.
Oh, wow.
I think it's my movie of the year as well. I would say 10.
Wow. See, I want to watch it again, but David doesn't.
I'd go for a 5.
Wow.
Really didn't like it that
Robin?
Much.
Robin?
The Castle Curmudgeon says 3.
Ooh.
It's the lack of flying cars.
Wow. Yes.
Ridley, next movie you make, let's have more flying cars. Robin will increase his review if possible.
So where
supercar. Do supercar.
Where I was going to link into, though, is, of course, it's not the only place to see Philip K. Dick adaptations at the moment, because we've got this TV series called Electric Dreams on. And now Sam and I have watched them, I think, up to date.
I think we've seen about 4 episodes,
George,
I think, at the moment.
I've recorded them all, but I haven't had a chance to watch
them. So, Robin, have you seen any?
I haven't seen any.
Ah, so, Sam, over to us then. What do you think of Electric Dreams so far?
Actually, the very first one, which was about the soldiers, I can't remember the title. I'm really awful at things like that. I thought that was great fun, and I loved the science fiction universe of that. I thought it was brilliant. I don't think there's any I've not liked. My favourite was perhaps the one where we saw with Timothy Spall in it, where he went to, and without too many spoilers if you haven't seen it.
The commuter,
that was the one. And he kind of worked at a train station and he realised that certain people were jumping off the train in between stations really randomly at this one point, 28 minutes in. And it turned out to be a mystical, whatever perception you have of it, but a place.
Macon Heights.
That's right. And it did remind me a little bit of San Junipero, which was from Black Mirror, which I absolutely love. It's one of my favourite all-time stories. But so far, all of the stories in this, I'm really loving them. I really like them. Not so much the last one, wasn't as good.
I quite liked the last one. Again, very Blade Runner-y.
Yeah.
Very what's real, what's not real.
Yeah. The second one I wasn't sure about.
Yes, the one with Anna Paquin.
Oh, no, the second one was where they had Geraldine Chaplin in, which was wonderful. I actually really liked that.
Where she wanted to go back to Earth, and so... They got him to take her back to Earth, but Earth doesn't exist
anymore.
So they were lying to her all
along. Have you seen it at all, Alex?
Yeah, well, The Impossible Planet, which I thought, why are they doing an adaptation of a Doctor Who story?
Yes, yes, yes.
Brilliant.
Did you like
really
that one,
it.
Though?
Yeah,
I thought that was a lovely story.
Geraldine Chaplin was brilliant.
She was brilliant.
So I'm really enjoying it. And an interesting little thing about the show Electric Dreams, I was doing some Googling today, and there's a pal of mine, you probably know him as well, and I've immediately forgotten it, Brian Robb. Brian Robb has a blog where he is basically comparing and contrasting the original Philip K. Dick short stories with the Electric Dreams versions.
Oh, how fascinating.
Really interesting. And I think so far for 4 episodes, I think only one of them more or less follows the short story.
The other three
basically just do something completely different to what the short
story
did.
We were watching them. I wondered how it could... Because it didn't feel... To me, it liked Blade Runner in a lot of ways, and it didn't feel like there was that, sort of Philip K. Dick spin on it.
They're quite long essays, and he's quite detailed in looking at it.
It's
very
those.
Interesting, really seeing how it's all developed and put together. So
I must have a look.
So that was good stuff, and we've been enjoying that.
Other Philip K. Dick adaptations?
The Man in the
like?
High Castle.
Tell me about that one.
Mentioned. It's a TV series at the moment.
A very important TV series. And actually, one that I'd put in a vote for, The Adjustment Bureau.
I enjoyed The Adjustment Bureau. I thought that was a great movie.
Yes.
I must admit, I haven't seen either of those. So what was good about them? What did you like?
you got Emily Stone in the Adjustment Bureau. What's not
oh,
too
well,
much
there.
Not to like?
There you go.
Well, there
She's
you go.
Mary Poppins next year.
Oh,
is
she
really? Is Mary Poppins.
Is she really? That's a new bit.
The return of Mary Poppins with Emily Blunt, who studied Julie Andrews just to actually get the role.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. Wow, interesting. I mean, obviously, Total Recall is one, which
Total
was from
Recall's
We Can
brilliant.
Remember It for You. You for
Wholesale.
Get my words right.
Oh, I have some Total Recall trivia for you.
Oh, go on, Robin.
Okay, did you know that a sequel was planned with Arnold Schwarzenegger returning as Quaid, who is now a law enforcer?
Mm-hmm.
That movie would have seen Quaid in another adaptation of a Philip K. Dick story where telepaths can foresee crimes before they're actually committed.
Oh, is that Scanners?
With clairvoyance being provided by the Martian telepaths to tie both films together.
Really? Wow.
Sadly, it'd be another 12 years in a radically rewritten script before Total Recall 2 was retitled, reimagined, restar screens by the hands of Steven Spielberg as Minority Report.
Oh.
So by then, proving the truth is often stranger than fiction, Schwarzenegger had his sights set firmly on the political arena and would be sworn in as governor of California. Or maybe that was just a recall dream.
With the words, I'll be back.
Have you seen Minority Report, George?
I really liked it, apart from Colin Farrell, who I just can't watch in anything. But
isn't it funny? I don't like him.
I don't know, but... Yeah.
Well, Colin Farrell wasn't in Minority Report. That was,
oh, he was in
Tom
Total
Cruise.
Recall. Then. Oh,
Tom Cruise was Minority Report. Colin Farrell was Total Recall. Was Farrell in the Minority Report?
I thought he was. I could be wrong.
Quickly to Wikipedia.
I thought he was the one who comes after Tom Cruise when Tom Cruise goes off the rails, as it were.
Oh, you might be right. I have to relook at that.
Perhaps he modelled it on his role as the killer in Daredevil.
I mean, why they did Total Recall again just was beyond me with Colin Farrell.
I don't know why they remake these things.
It wasn't a very good... I watched it because I do like to torture myself.
Right.
And then I've got lots to complain about, you see, if they remake one that I thought was wonderful and ruin it, which they did. Because, I mean, Sharon Stone, I mean, she takes a lot of beating as well, doesn't she?
It's an interesting one, because we've got a little list in front of us here, that 2002 there was a Terry Nation adaptation for an Out of This World episode of a Philip K. Dick story.
Interesting. Yes.
And indeed, George was right. Colin Farrell was indeed in Minority Report.
Yes.
Well done.
I don't usually get these things right, so I started to doubt myself.
A producer has to acknowledge it.
There you go.
You want trivia, as I have a microphone for this particular moment, can I ask, generally, what does the K in Philip K. Dick stand for?
Ooh. Kindred, isn't it?
Nice.
Is
Straight
it?
Exactly.
Ooh.
And shared with another very famous science fiction author?
I don't know, actually.
Robin?
No idea.
Ursula K. Le Guin. Both stands for Kindred. And both
went
to the same college in America.
My word.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I didn't know that. So
you have
to let
Alex talk some more.
Yeah. Well, it depends what studio we're in, I think, whether we can have a microphone or not. I think we've got a little bit of a musical interlude now. Memories of Green by Vangelis.
Memories of Green, but mostly All Creatures Great and Small.
Listen to that.
Thank you. Midweek Drive on Siren FM 107.3.
Are you there? Are you there? Are you there?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
This is who we are.
Coffee House Hermits from Lincoln, England. We're all travellers in space and time.
With strange characters.
And it's the one with the nose.
I absolutely love her.
And surprises galore.
A free concert. Think of it as being sung to by Elvis Presley.
Unusual discussion topics.
Why would you want to give every child a water pistol? It was a bit like choosing between kittens and babies.
That will make your ribs sore.
You have really done your homework. Aww,
that's what we call show business.
Join the Midweek Drive team every Wednesday from 5 till 7 on Siren FM 107.3.
And, of course, that was actually All Creatures Great and Small. And instead, we're now going to George and In This Month.
I was going to say, what people don't realise, of course, is that All Creatures Great and Small was adapted from a Philip K. Dick short story called Cows Can Be Replicants Too, which is one of his lesser-known works.
The question is, did they use real cows on the TV
show? Exactly.
Yes. Or were they replicants?
Absolutely. So where are we going now, Sam? Sorry.
We're going to go into George and In This Month.
In This Month. So, David's been digging out some facts, and slightly different change of pace this time. Instead of 800 years or 100 years, we're going with the O-1s.
O-1s, yes.
The O-1s. So, did you know that 801 years ago...
801 years.
801 years ago was the death of King John of England.
Wow.
And he was succeeded by his 9-year-old son, Henry III.
Nine-year-old.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. Good Lord. Young.
Imagine having all that pressure.
Did he go to your castle, Robin?
No, it wasn't built until 700 years ago.
Oh, so this is even before your castle existed.
Is that 701 Absolutely. Years ago?
Wow.
The reason for our musical interlude with All Creatures Great and Small is because 101 years ago, James Herriot, the British veterinary surgeon and writer, was born.
Wow.
And obviously he went on to write a whole series of books about his experiences, including All Creatures Great and Small.
Wow. 101 years ago.
101 years ago, yeah.
Good Lord.
It's hard to imagine when we think of this as not that... Well, it is pretty old now, I suppose. I mean, how many years ago was Peter Davison... as playing James Herriot.
30 years.
It might even be 40 years.
Yes.
Blimey.
That's scary, isn't it?
Before Doctor Who, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Obviously, I wasn't even born then.
No. I think everyone was expecting Robert Hardy to get cast as Doctor Who, weren't they? when they heard it was someone from All Creatures Great and Small. So, 91 years ago today, the children's book Winnie the Pooh was published by A.A. Milne.
Fantastic.
Oh, wow.
I nearly found the Winnie the Pooh theme to play. I can't suffer you with that. So.
My wife still knows a lot of the poems off by heart.
So does my mum.
I don't think it was something kids. I ever saw, you know. I never really got into Winnie the Pooh. I don't remember it at all. I just remember some... tiger thing jumping up and down.
Tigger.
Oh, is that him?
Tiger thing.
Tigger, how dare you? How very dare you?
Did he bounce on his tail? I imagined that. Oh, right, okay. It's like a pogo stick.
He's made of rubber, his bottoms are made of the spring. He's bouncy, 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 bouncy. Fun.
Oh, dear.
So the next
But the most wonderful thing about Tiggers is he's the only one.
I do remember that, actually. I remember you just said that.
So the next fact is perfect for the Stone Tapes, but 31 years ago today, in 9th of October 1986, Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical The Phantom of the Opera premiered in London.
There you are.
Oh, I did 31
years
ago.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Gosh, that's making me feel really old now. Since that's one of my favourite musicals ever.
And our last fact today, which is 26 years ago... 24th of October 1991, and that makes me feel very, very old, was the sad death of Gene Roddenberry, American screenwriter and producer and creator of Star Trek.
Wow.
26 years ago. 26
can you believe that, Robin? 26 years.
Yes, because I'm actually re-watching season 5 of Next Generation, and on the box set there is a tribute to him as one of the special features. And we've just passed the episode which is dedicated to him and his death, and I thought, oh wow.
Aww. I think I remember that when it aired the first time.
And after that beautiful music, Moore Vangelis, which is wonderful, and we're going to David now for his film of the month. David, surprise us. What are we talking about for
well,
film of the month?
Strangely, you won't be at all surprised to hear that the film of the month is actually Winnie the Pooh. No, it's it's Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner. 1982, that film was made, and we watched it on DVD the other week. And honestly, it's still as fresh and as new and as mind-blowingly just wow as ever. And for a film that was made in 1982, that is just extraordinary. They really got it right. Directed by Ridley Scott, with Harrison Ford, our friend Harrison, who could act back in those days, apparently. he did very well. Rutger Hauer, one of the world's greatest villains. And I think in Blade Runner, he really pulled out all the stops and gave us a very, very kind of fractured, broken villain who wasn't quite as villainous, perhaps, as he was made out to be. It's brilliant. Sean Young. Oh, this is Sean, isn't it? Sean
yes,
Young.
It is.
And Edward James Olmos, who's also in the new film, which I was quite pleased to see as a little cameo.
Yeah, a little cameo. With
a cameo was nice.
And it actually surprised me that, just yeah. digressing a moment, because when I saw him, I thought, oh, it's Commander Adama. I didn't realise that was him when he was so in this film, so young and very, very skinny. He did. Yeah. He looked very different.
So, as we all know, it's a loose adaptation of the 68 novel Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick, set in Los Angeles in 2019. So a couple of years to go before we have flying cars and and rain and all
I'm
that
sure
kind of thing.
I'm sure it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. I'm sure it's going to happen. Again, replicants are bioengineered by the Tyrrell Corporation, and Roy Batty, or Rutger Hauer, and three other replicants kind of escape and go rogue, which leads Deckard, Harrison Ford, to come and try and catch them and kill them before they can wreak havoc across America or whatever it is they're going to do. It's a tremendous film. As I say, I think it's truly got the status of cult. I was very interested by Alex saying earlier that it wasn't received well on release.
Yeah.
It really didn't do well. It's hard to look at that film now and to think, why didn't that do well? That's extraordinary. I wonder why that the critics didn't like it.
And people didn't buy tickets either as well.
They really didn't?
Yeah.
No?
I'm led to believe it was a box office bomb, really.
Wow.
Yes, it was true of John Carpenter's thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's really surprising. It does surprise me. I'm trying to think when I first saw Blade Runner, and I don't remember whether I saw it in the cinema, but I feel I must have done, because you couldn't have been, you know, in 1982 or around that time, maybe I saw a later run of it when it hit the cinemas again. But you would need that whole widescreen experience to appreciate that film first time, I would think.
You would. But it's such an extraordinary milieu that Ridley Scott puts on the screen. Mm. As I mentioned earlier, there's so much detail in it, so much to look at, so much to appreciate and view and watch and see. And you can really see how this 2019 LA is. It's not a pleasant place. I mean, it's overcrowded, it's dirty, it's smelly, it's smoggy. It's
very dystopian.
Very dystopian. Mm. And there's so many lovely, lovely scenes in it. I mean, favourite scenes I had were all the ones set in the the Bradbury Building? Have I got that?
Yes,
right?
It is Bradbury
Building. The Bradbury
Building,
which is extraordinary, where a character, J.F. Sebastian, has his workshop with his broken toys, which I thought was beautiful. And again, I said to Sam, why didn't they go and use the Bradbury Building again for
Maybe
the
they
new
couldn't.
Film?
It's,
Maybe
it's
they
now
couldn't.
FBI offices, I believe, isn't it?
Oh, really?
Why didn't they use that? Or build it as a set? Come on, you've got the money. I was so disappointed they didn't use that, because I thought that would have been actually where perhaps they would have sort of had his base or something. But it wasn't. It was somewhere else. Even the little, I was reminded just looking up and watching it, High Pike. As Taffy Lewis, who's the Chinese guy who's serving things. I was reading that apparently he did his scene in one take, which is almost unheard of for Ridley Scott, who always goes to 2-3 takes on everything, which is why his films end up so complicated. But apparently he did it one take, that was it. It's a beautiful scene. And there's also the lovely scene with the guy with the eyeballs. He makes the eyeballs.
Yes.
He's all cooked into his freezer soup thing and... Oh, I don't know. It's just there's scene after scene and character after character that stay with you in that film.
You actually have sympathy.
And you actually have sympathy for them, including the replicants.
Yeah,
even
very much so.
Chris and the replicants, you have this sympathy for them. And I have to say that,
you know, you watch Blade Runner and you get to know all of these characters and you remember them. I'm actually, we only saw it last week and I'm struggling to remember the characters in Blade Runner 2049, whatever it is.
Or even the title.
And I think if it doesn't make that kind of immediate impact, it's something missing from that film. And I just feel that Blade Runner has got soul. It's got heart. And the new one, that's missing. It's a perfectly good, competent science fiction film with lots and lots of beautiful stuff to watch and see. It doesn't seem to have a heart for me.
I actually missed the Chinese element out of that one. It wasn't there at all, was it?
A real omission, actually. Yeah. You know, I mentioned that there were a few flaws for me.
Yeah.
I really did feel that there was a soul in that love story, but... Mm.
Yes, between him and Joy, I thought that too.
But I think it was a big omission because, in Blade Runner, the future is very much a melange of, kind of American and Chinese and Japanese and cultural mishmash. And and you see that in the characters as well as the billboards.
Yes.
And in the new film, you saw it in the billboards, you didn't see any Asian characters.
But you didn't hear the Chinese sound that I can't repeat what it is, that where there was a ship going across atop
with
the Bradbury building,
things,
and then you'd hear the Chinese voice.
Yeah.
When,
it was an advert,
and that had
ship,
such... It just had such an atmosphere.
Resonance within it.
I just love
Blade Runner. I think, you know, watching it, you know, before we watched the new one, perhaps that was a mistake. Perhaps we shouldn't have done that. But I don't know.
So
by,
reminded
by comparison,
of it.
If you haven't seen Blade Runner 1982, rush out and watch it because it really is one of the classic.
Okay, a score
films.
Out of this one then, David.
Oh,
you've got to give it me.
10 out of 10.
It's
part of the canon of modern film, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes.
Alex?
9.5.
No, you're just being awkward. What about you, Robin?
I'll go 9.5.
Okay. Right. Good.
There we are.
It's the off-world colonies, you see. We've had the acid rain, we've had the electromagnetic pulse, we don't know where we're going.
No.
And, of course, the lack of flying cars.
That's right. I'm very disappointed in the lack of flying cars. I think we should have them. And the jetpacks. We still haven't got jetpacks. We were promised jetpacks.
They didn't have jetpacks in the original, though, to be fair. And that's all we've got time for. So thanks so much to Patricia H. Ash, Robin Pierce, David J. Howe, George Mann, and, of course, our producer, Alex Lefchuk. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And I'm Sam Stone. Until next time, goodbye.